Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Best Ever You show with your hosts, Elizabeth Hamilton and Dr. Katie Eastman. And Katie, are you like a little snow girl over there?
Oh.
Can I recognize you, or are you in your front yard like frozen?
No, I'm here. I'm just looking out the window, and gee, it's a familiar sight.
Snow!
Yeah,
it's only another foot, you know. What are you going
to
do?
I'm totally practicing what I'm writing in the blog, which is to try to change my mindset and see it as a gift. But the fact is, I would just love to be in Hawaii right now.
Yeah, I know. Well, we're sort of worried during this show today that we might have a blackout with the power. So if we suddenly disappear, no offense to anybody or anything, but our power went out and... Hopefully, you have a generator, so if the power goes out, all six of us are coming over to your house.
Yeah, okay, that's good. That's fine, because
yeah.
It's just Callie and I, so you're welcome anytime.
And you're going to cook, and you're going to...
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. All right, well, on with it then. To go faster here, in case the power does go out, we have a really neat guest with us today. His name is Glenn Sondag. He's from Chicago, and he's an author and all sorts of neat stuff. Are you there? You're not in the middle of a snowstorm, right?
No. It's actually quite nice here today.
Yeah, what define nice? Is that like 70?
Well, 20, probably 25 degrees, just
a heavy
overcast. We had a little snow last night, but it hasn't been bad.
Oh, that's nice. Well, good. Well, come to Maine. We'll warm you up.
Okay.
I think, Katie, I was going to say the next few days, I saw negative digits on the newscast for the temperature. I'm scared by that, but I'm leaving anyway to go back to the Midwest on Saturday to go to Minnesota. So anyway, Glenn, you have a really neat book that is coming out, Anything Other Than Naked. I would love to hear how you came up with the name of that book, Anything Other Than Naked.
Well, I was when I was writing a particular paragraph, I commented that it is important as to how you present yourself in circumstances anything other than when you're naked, that it does matter what you look like.
Oh.
And somebody who was actually helping me with the book came up with the idea that would be an appropriate title. So.
Mm-hmm. And you, you know, especially in Best Ever You, I know we've really enjoyed having you as a columnist and expert on our site. Because, you know, you're the guy out there saying, I think of you being the biggest fan of that song, pants on the ground, looking like a fool,
oh, yeah.
Pants on the ground. You know, just like induce you. You know, you're the guy out there telling everybody how to tie their tie and what to wear to this and that. And is that what this book is about? Is it a continuation of your column on our website?
Yes, a number of the things that I've written about on the column, of course, are included in the book. And the book is really intended to be a practical guide for men on how to dress properly for virtually any occasion.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're in it, yeah, I almost want to go through different scenarios with you and make this call sort of a call that people could tune into and get some tips. Do you want to go that direction, or
certainly that's
or,
fine?
Okay.
You
well,
like.
I wanted to. Okay, we'll do that in a minute. I wanted to back up just a little bit, and you know, you're the father of four sons. Is some of this book written from those experiences too? Did you ever have one of your kids, you know, try to go out the door and rip jeans and a T-shirt, and just not appropriate? Or
oh,
I know I've got
hey,
that going on here.
They probably did, and that really wasn't an issue. What I did a number of years ago was I sat down and I was actually penciling some ideas for our four sons on, again, how to dress properly. And that's really what led to me putting together what amounted to a 20 pages of on this topic, and I ended up taking it to Kinko, literally, and printing it and giving it to my four sons as well as some other friends and so on. And it gained some traction with some people, and they thought it was worthwhile. And then from there, I simply started writing more and more on this topic, and then that turned into the idea that I was going to try at my best to actually get a book published on this topic. There has not been a new book on this topic for quite a number of years, and the ones that are out there, and I'm certainly not being critical of them, but they tend to be 200-300 page books that I'm not so sure the average man has really any interest in reading. I think that's a bit too lengthy.
So where can someone go to buy your book? I know you have a website, anything other than naked.com. And your book is due out, it was due out a little bit ago, but it's delayed slightly. So is it February 1?
February 1 is the official publisher's release date. We are taking pre-orders, and we expect to be shipping books literally before the end of January. So they are literally at the printer as we speak. So you can go on the website, anything other than naked.com, if someone wishes to order it. And, of course, we've also established the book with all the e-readers. So if someone prefers it on their Kindle, they'll have that opportunity as well. And we, of course, hope for distribution in the bookstores as well.
Good. Well, perfect. And I look forward to reading it. How many pages did you end up with?
We ended up with 86 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And we covered all the topics in terms of the various types of apparel. Occasions where one thing is more appropriate than another. Some do's and don'ts. Certainly a number of tips on improving your appearance.
Super. Katie, do you have anything you want to chime in with yet?
Oh, I've been dying for this interview. I have a husband who's either Brooks Brothers or L.L. Bean, and nothing in between. And a lot of times we will go places, and it's either one or the other. And I keep trying to introduce to him that middle ground, how you can go someplace and look like not quite Brooks Brothers, not quite formal, but nicer than L.L. Bean. Whoops, I suppose I shouldn't have said that. But I mean nicer than just what you'd wear around the house. Let me change that. So
okay.
I would love to get it. Pardon?
It's okay. You can.
Okay. Well, I'm using L.L. Bean as an example because everybody around here is familiar.
It's more outdoorsy. L.L. Bean is, I think what you're trying to say is between a suit and the outdoorsy look, there's somewhere in between. Yeah, absolutely.
I think is the biggest challenge, trying to help him understand, you know, you could go just one step further beyond what you wear around, but not really knowing how to say that. And he'll often ask me. So I would love some advice about that, Glenn.
Okay. Well, first off, does he have opportunities in his daily life to wear a suit and tie? Is that what he goes to work in?
No. He works for an agency that is very, very casual. I think that's part of the issue.
All right. Well, clearly today, and this certainly I'd say over the last several years, the trend is to more casual apparel. You can see it with companies having casual Fridays and other companies even being casual during, let's say, the summer months. And certain industries, clearly, it's casual. You know, every day, I think if you're a software engineer in Silicon Valley, I think you go to work in casual attire. And the question becomes, what defines casual attire? We know it's not jeans, albeit I suspect some people might think otherwise. And I would say it's really not a golf shirt either. That's casual. But if we're talking about business casual, something that you'd wear to work. That generally means a collared shirt, a sweater, perhaps a pair of navy, you know, wool slacks or cotton slacks or tan slacks. Shoes can be loafers for business casual. It just is not jeans and a T-shirt, and certainly then isn't a shirt and tie. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone's taste runs to Brooks Brothers, you could certainly outfit your wardrobe, I'm sure, for business casual at a Brooks Brothers and not be overdressed, I would think. L.L. Bean might be a step in the other direction, that I might not go for, I say, what I consider to be business casual.
Okay.
I think
so. If he's going out to dinner when he's wearing business casual, how does he step it up one notch?
Well, I'd say a sweater, particularly in the this time of the year, and collared shirt with a V-neck sweater or a mock turtleneck sweater is a nice look with a pair of wool slacks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful. There was another part of your story.
Go ahead.
What?
Sorry. I forgot what I was going to ask him, but go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to ask him. There's a part of your story that I find really intriguing, Glenn, and that is your mom and her influence in how you started to do what you're doing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, certainly. Thank you. Well, my mother is 99 years old, and we're soon to go, our whole family, to go to Minnesota to have a birthday party on her 100th birthday coming up in April.
Wow.
My mother was what I would say was a seamstress extraordinaire. This is somebody who literally in the morning would make a set of drapes for somebody and in the evening would pound out a wedding dress. And sewed hours upon hours every day. And there just wasn't anything she couldn't do with fabric. And that included upholstering, a chair. It ran the gamut from, you know, covering a pair of women's shoes to match a hat. So in our house in Minnesota where I grew up, there was cloth and material and you know, all around the house at all times. That sewing machine was buzzing constantly, and it was a result of that, that, you know, she was doing it so many hours a day that I couldn't help but be influenced by it and learn something from it. And as I said in the book, I suppose I learned things that a 10 and 12 and 14-year-old boy had absolutely no interest in learning, but I did anyway. And so I did come to understand the difference between, you know, silk and rayon and wool and cotton, something about construction. When I went off to college, I actually knew how to sew on a button and hem a pair of slacks myself. So clearly she was a strong influence. And it certainly influenced, I suspect, my sense of style and color. Not so much necessarily fashion per se. So,
do you know how to use a sewing machine? I'm just curious. I bet you do.
You know, I absolutely did at one time. I haven't been in front of one for, I'm sure, 30 plus years, but I literally did know how. I wouldn't call myself a seamstress, however, but she was terrific at it. And she sewed up until about a year ago. She finally, put the sewing machine, on hold.
Yeah, maybe. You know, my grandma, she is in March, she will be, I think, about 96 or 97, same thing. And that's very interesting because I grew up that same way in her house. I didn't grow up in my grandma's house, but being around her all the time, she was the same person. I mean, she sewed all of the bridesmaids' gowns for my sister's wedding. She did the draperies. She did dolls. She did shoes. She did blankets. If you had a baby, everything came your way for the baby room. Where are these people now? You know, I don't know who sews like that anymore, and I don't know that it's in. It doesn't seem so much to be in style to do so. Do you think it is?
I suspect you're correct that it's probably somewhat of a lost art today.
Katie, I can hear you. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I was it's more expensive now. It's actually, if you sew your own clothes, it's not less expensive necessarily. So if you do it, you do it because you want to do it. And I think that's one of the drawbacks. But I think it's such a great story. And what you were saying, Glenn, about how your mom influenced you and as moms, and of course Elizabeth with her four sons, it's such a great example of how what we do in even in our creative time and our creative endeavors, influences our kids. Maybe not necessarily just our professional, but also our creativity. And one thing that I really admire too about you is the fact that you're a male doing this. And my dad knit all the way through law school. And it is not that common for men to do these kind of creative endeavors. And I'm wondering if you've had any feedback about that.
I can't say as I have. I don't think what I picked up from my mother I was necessarily able to pass on to my four sons, albeit I think they, you know, certainly, you know, dress just fine, frankly. But I just had an abiding interest in it for a very long time. I really think it goes back to literally sitting on the floor of our living room holding a McCall's dress pattern as my mother was, you know, got out her pinking shears and would, you know, cut out the pattern to make a dress for somebody. And it was that constantly being associated with, you know, cloth, fabric, making something, fixing something. And so I liked, you know, probably dressing a bit better than, you know, somebody else might have. And my mother made me sport coats, you know, to go to church on Easter Sunday. I'd have a new sport coat every year. I don't think the average 12, 13-year-old particularly had much interest in that.
Do you think there's anything that exists that's a bad thing to wear? You know, are there things that you just think are horrendous? Like, no matter what, don't put that on.
Yeah.
Or do you think it's to each his own style? Yeah. I'm curious you could rattle off some of those things. Like, no matter what, don't wear this.
A white belt. Other than going play golf. If you're going to play golf, it's, you know, it's probably okay. But other than that, doesn't need to be worn. I think there's a couple of mistakes that men make, and part of it is not knowing.
Chevy Chase.
Pardon?
I'm picturing Chevy Chase. That's all I get. Whenever I just think of the Chevy Chase with white shoes and a white belt, just playing golf in Caddyshack or something.
Yeah,
okay, yep, sorry, I got that out.
And I say on the golf course, it probably works just fine, but probably no place else. But there's mistakes guys make. I think some of it has to do with not knowing what to wear when. And I often commented that the reason women always know what to wear to a specific occasion is because they talk to one another in advance of it. You know, you get on the phone with one another. What are you wearing?
Yeah.
A black dress tonight?
Yeah.
No, I'm, you know, and so on. Well, guys don't call one another and say, "Hey, Bob, you know, are you wearing your gabardine suit tonight, or are you, you know, you going with a sweater?" So, you know, you guys kind of show up, and then they stand there and they go, "Gee, maybe I'm underdressed or perhaps overdressed at some occasions." So, there's a little bit of that. I think there's the simple fact that a lot of men just don't care much about how they look. And maybe they are in a job or a profession that it, frankly, doesn't matter. I mean, I think if you're, you know, living in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and your job is working for the, you know, Forest Service, I don't think you're really too concerned about, you know, the makeup of your wardrobe.
Right.
And so when you have those occasions, maybe to dress up, you're maybe lacking in some knowledge about it. But there's certainly some mistakes, and if you want to see the mistakes, all you had to do was watch the Golden Globes the other night. I mean, here's formal occasion where every woman is dressed to the nines in a gorgeous gowns and, you know, rented jewelry by Harry Winston, and the guy standing next to her can't tie the tie. In fact, not only can't tie the tie, Johnny Depp shows up without one. And And Robert Downey Jr. shows up not wearing a tux to a formal occasion.
Yeah.
So, and people in other facets of life, not just the entertainers, you see the issue, things that they do badly. I could rattle off a few of them for you. I think the probably number one in my book was men's inability to tie a tie properly.
Yeah.
with a dimple, no less, in the knot. They either don't tie it right, it's too loose, too tight, the tie's either too long, it's too short, perhaps it even might have a gravy stain on it. But anything around the tie, I think men don't seem to do that one very well.
And that's one of my peeves. That is probably number one on my pet peeve of, I don't know why it bugs me, but it drives me nuts. I can be in an office setting and I'll want to walk up to people and retie their tie and fix it. That is one thing my dad taught me to do, was tie a man's tie. And, you know, my dad, we have a number of children, 10, 11, 12, just, and their friends. It just depends on the day. And, you know, he showed us all how to throw a football, how to play basketball, how to throw a baseball, and how to tie a tie. All of us girls, without question, can maneuver through those activities
that
with perfection.
Oh, you're ahead
funny.
Of a lot of men then.
But is there a right knot right now that people should be using? Is there
which knot is
in style right now? I know
it's not a matter of style, really. It's some people prefer a half Windsor, others a full Windsor. Some of it also has to do with the thickness of the tie, the inability to do a good knot, or perhaps the collar, the length of the collar points, and whether or not it's a spread collar kind of dictates. And then lastly, the shape of your face. Some men don't wear the right collar style and for their face, and so the whole thing doesn't come off very well. But I wouldn't say that there's a right or a wrong choice in the type of knot that you choose to tie.
Okay. What about when the tie is tied, there's a skinny piece and a wider piece. That skinny piece should not be hanging below the wider piece, or not be seen at all. There's, you know, some people tie their ties so that they go below their belt. Some people tie them so they're in the middle of their chest. It's all over the place. Where should that tie land?
The bottom of the tie should brush the top of the belt buckle. So it's just hitting and slightly covering the belt buckle. And if it completely covers the belt buckle, then it is just a shade too long. And if it's not touching the belt buckle, it is a shade too short. And you're right, narrow end of the tie should not be hanging out the bottom. You can usually rectify that in several ways. You could actually tuck the small end inside your shirt, in the middle of your chest, or you can take a scissors and cut it off and take it to your tailor and have them hem it up. Because actually, some men, you know, have that issue where they're short-waisted, for example, and sometimes the ties just get to be too long, and so there's ways to get around that, but I think that's probably number one. My second one would probably be white socks with anything other than wearing, you know, athletic wear,
no white socks with dress shoes.
No white socks with dress shoes. And truly amazing, I was watching CNN just last week, and Anderson Cooper was interviewing Piers Morgan, and he had on a sport jacket with a shirt and tie, black shoes, and white socks.
White socks. I caught that.
Did you?
I did.
You know, the guy wasn't standing in Uganda, on some field operation. You could forgive him for that. But he's in Studio One in New York in CNN, and he's got white socks on. I thought, my gosh. So you see that one once in a while.
What about the reverse of that? What about like the critters who wear the black socks with the sandals to mow the lawn? That it freaks me out.
Yeah, that really is absolutely verboten. First of all, you don't wear socks with sandals to begin with, and certainly you don't want to wear black anklets in that. That's a throwback, too. You see that, I think, more on probably men over the age of 50. I doubt my sons could fall victim to that one.
There's really quite nothing hotter than a man mowing his lawn with no shirt on, with, like, knee-high black socks and sandals and plaid shorts. That's just...
There you go.
Well, the only thing hotter is the ones you see on Old Orchard Beach with the bikini bathing suits all over it.
Oh, gosh, yeah, that is perfect. We got to ask about that. Let's let him keep going with his list and remember to bring that one up because that is just wow.
I think the third one I'd point out is men that don't button their jacket properly, their sport jacket or suit jacket. And this one you see blown by the best of them, presidents and CEOs alike. And the rule is really quite simple. You button the bottom button. Excuse me, the bottom button is left open. You button the one above it. So
if you're wearing a
jacket that is a two-button sport jacket or suit, you button the top button only, not both. If you've got on a jacket that is a three-button jacket, you're buttoning the middle button for certain and the top one optional. Again, the bottom button is always left open. The one above it, you button. And so that's
even
kind of
when you're seated?
No.
Okay.
I would say that for purposes of, you know, of comfort and so on, you open the jacket when you're seated. But you just see people wearing a three button suit and they'll button all three buttons. This looks looks bad. The next one I guess would be scuffed, unpolished, dirty, worn shoes. I think that men don't realize that how people notice your shoes, even though you may have to look down to do it. I think it's a very noticeable aspect of your overall look. And I think for some reason, a lot of men just don't pay any attention to it. They don't polish their shoes regularly. They don't keep them in shoe trees, which is which they should. And they're just, I say, either scuffed or dirty or worn, and just and then they're reasonably dressed up. I mean, and you just say to yourself, you didn't kind of complete the picture with that.
Yeah.
Next one would
what
be.
What about an accessory for men to shoes? And that's, I don't know if guys still carry around briefcases, but what about a scuffed up, worn briefcase? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, I guess that might be a sign of a true road warrior, you know, someone who's, I wouldn't be so terribly concerned about that.
Okay.
As long as you weren't carrying your papers around in a paper bag, I think a leather briefcase of some kind, even if it's a bit worn, wouldn't be an issue.
Okay.
But the next last one would be trousers that are either too long or too short, and probably more men would err on this one with trousers that are too long, so that they're actually hanging down in the back and touching the floor. I can't imagine wearing a pair of trousers that nice wool trousers with a suit or a sport jacket, and stepping on the bottom of the trousers because they're on the ground. That whole look is just awful, and yet men will go out the door and never seemingly look in a full-length mirror and realize that their trousers are too long, and, easy to remedy. Take it to your laundry. There's usually a tailor or somebody there that can fix that problem. And then too short, it would be the other side of the coin where you
with
look
white
like
socks
you've
got. On.
Yes, with white socks on, yeah. And then particularly if you have your trousers, the belt line, way above your navel so that you're wearing high water pants, that's a really nice look. So,
yeah.
But those, I think, are the five things I would say that are kind of common mistakes that men make,
what about
of which are easy to remedy.
Okay, I'm taking it one step further. Do you... Here's something we worry about here sometimes. What about, how do you know that a suit is well made? How do you know it fits appropriately? And maybe if you could, how do you, I'm going to use a word that probably is not quite right, but Katie, you can fix it. I'll say it and you can fix it and soften it a little bit. But how do you spot like a cheap suit from an expensive suit? because, you know, guys are worried about it just like girls are, where you're like, oh, you know, do you know what I mean? There are some really poorly made suits, and how do you avoid that and not put that on your body?
Well, I suppose price in overwhelmingly is a reasonably good gauge of it. The suits that are what you call, quote, cheap, one telling sign is to look inside the leg of the trousers and see if they're lined to the knee.
Okay.
They should be lined with a Bemberg or rayon or silk material, and it prevents perspiration from going through from the thigh or the leg to the fabric. And so any good suit or any good pair of men's slacks, if you look inside them, you'll see they're lined to the knee. And cheap, what you call a cheap suit probably isn't. What determines an expensive suit, on the other hand, are two things. And one is the quality of the fabric, and then secondly, the workmanship. The more the hand work that's done on a suit naturally is going to drive the price of it up. So if you've got somebody who is, hand rolling those lapels and hand stitching those buttonholes, and the buttons are made of animal horn and not plastic, and the lining, isn't horsehair. These are the things that, you don't really see immediately when you look at a suit, but go into the price. But more to your question about well-made, and is really, again, how it fits. And if you say, how do you know it doesn't fit right? Some of the obvious ones are, if you're looking at somebody from the back, and if you assume that the suit jacket is vented, either a center vent or perhaps side vent, particularly in a center vent suit, if the vent is opened, it doesn't cover, right then and there, the jacket is too tight, too small.
Mm-hmm.
If it isn't covering your butt, the suit's too short. If the pleats on those trousers are splayed, in other words, pulled, opened, the pant is too tight. A cheap suit has a poor belt line area where the waistband wasn't reinforced properly and tends to roll you're sitting. There's all kinds of things, and probably of equal importance than simply the price of it is selecting the suit that's right for your physique. There's if a guy has extremely broad shoulders, it really doesn't help the look to buy a suit with a square shoulder, because it just makes you look that much larger, and unless that's your intent, you need a soft shoulder for a man with that's very, very broad shoulder. And conversely, if a guy's slim and thin and does not have much shoulder, width, a suit with pointed shoulders or square shoulders is going to make him look larger. He'll look better. So those are just some things. There's a lot more than that, but
sure. Well, I noticed in your background you have you worked as a men's clothing retailer. When was that?
100 years ago.
100 years ago. Yeah, I watched myself.
That's how old I am, Katie. I was in graduate school quite a number of years ago, and to earn some money, of course, I had a job at a retail clother, men's clother, and worked there for a little over a year when I was going to grad school. You learn something from that, of course. Again, it kind of was in lockstep with my abiding interest in clothes. And then when you do that, of course, you turn your entire paycheck over to the company you work for to buy more clothes than you need. I'm not sure it got me anywhere financially, but I've always often commented as well. After that, I went into the I was a captain in the Air Force for 4 years, and so naturally, in those 4 years, I wore the same thing to work every day.
I often
remember how I thought to myself, I'm not so sure I could really make a career of this. and in part because I really didn't want to wear the same outfit every day. Probably it was a small influence on why I didn't stay past my my required 4 years, albeit it was a terrific experience, and I don't regret it one bit. But and from there, I went into the investment business, and that's what I've been doing for the last 39 years. So.
One thing that really strikes me about this wonderful conversation, Glenn, is that so much about what you're saying has to do with not just self-respect, looking respectably, but also respecting the people you're with and respecting that you're going to dress according to what makes people feel comfortable. And I think that's a big challenge for a lot of men. I think that a lot of times they have an attitude, well, just screw it, I just want to be the way I am. And yet I've had people show up at funerals and in just the most god-awful outfits that look like they should be on the ski slope, and how disrespectful that is to the people that they're attending, you know, where they're attending. And can you say a little bit about that, about how much about the way a man dresses has to do with respect?
Well, it certainly does. And it's also respect for the what the person is attending. And you point out a funeral. Well, certainly, why somebody would want to attend a funeral, jeans, I don't know, but it certainly doesn't show much respect for the occasion. But in many occasions, you're told, in effect, what you're supposed to wear. You get an invitation for something, and it says on there, semi-formal, or it says formal, a wedding, for example. Formal wedding. What are they telling the man when they say formal wedding? They're saying, show up in a tuxedo. If you are in circumstances where you don't have a tuxedo, or perhaps financially it's a burden to rent a tuxedo, well, show up in a dark suit, white shirt, conservative tie, tie shoes. That works. But I say there's a lot of occasions when the invitation will tell you what it is. Now, cocktail attire, that's not jeans. I attend a lot of business conferences, and I see, guys showing up wearing a sport coat and blue jeans, and I don't think that works in a business environment. I think if you're getting on an airplane, and you've got on a sport jacket, a blue blazer, and you want to wear jeans to fly from, Chicago to, Poughkeepsie, that's fine. But when you're attending a business meeting of some types, it's not the right combination. And I say in so many cases, they tell you what it is you're supposed to wear. So when you don't wear that, aren't you in effect being slightly disrespectful? I think so.
Yeah. I think so. Well, and it's interesting to me when you go to business conferences, the first day everyone is dressed to the nines, and it gradually goes down. To by the time Saturday morning rolls around, and it's the last day of the conference, people show up in whatever they want.
Yeah,
that's true. That's been fascinating to me. I think that's really interesting. How it's you make your impression, and then by Saturday you don't care anymore.
You're in Bermuda shorts and sandals, and
I wondered if that's probably true. I know you're probably an expert in this, too, so I'm going to ask you, but if you're not, that's fine, too, just say so. Can we shift gears slightly over to women for 1 minute? Because I have a feeling you know the answers to some of these questions.
I'll give it a shot.
All right. With people you've interviewed and things like that, I'm sure you've seen everything. With respect to women and their suits, I was always taught never to wear red in an interview. Don't ever wear a red suit in an interview. Always wear something blue or black, probably not off-white even. Stick to blue and black for an interview. Is that still widely regarded as the standard these days for women? I know a guy isn't going to show up necessarily in a red suit. It seems to be a woman thing. So I ask.
I think I have to take a pass on that one. I wouldn't know the answer. What I would just say in general, that you want to make certain that it isn't the apparel that you're wearing that causes you to be noticed in that situation. Mm-hmm. If you were in a job interview, what you'd want to present yourself is looking very professional, right? Clean, mm-hmm. crisp, neat. And maybe, therefore, that's why the blues and the blacks work better than coming in with, you know, something that's, blazing red that you may look wonderful in, but it probably wasn't the right thing for that occasion. You don't want your apparel to draw the eye. Sometimes I almost think it'd be better if when you left, they couldn't remember what you wore, but
that's
you did
my
make
mom
it
always
an impression.
Said. They remember you and not the red suit. That's why you don't wear
it. I find that when I go to business meetings or sit down with clients, I'm very mindful of what I'm wearing to work that day. If I look at my schedule and I know that I'm going to be sitting down with clients, there are certain combinations that I probably wouldn't wear that I might wear the next day to work that certainly looks professional. But, I don't want, again, the clothes to be the focus for me. I just want them to recognize that I look professional.
Mm-hmm.
The tie's tied right, clean, crisp, pressed. I didn't look like I slept in it last night, that type of thing.
speaking of sitting down with people at lunch, there seem to be all sorts of things that you can do with your tie while you're at lunch. I've seen people tuck napkins into their tops of their dress shirt. I've seen people throw their tie over their shoulder, tuck their tie in the pocket. What's the appropriate thing to do with a tie when you're eating?
I don't know the answer to that. I just find that given the price of ties today, I really would like to leave the lunch not having a remembrance of the spaghetti sauce on the front of it. So I would tend to open a button on my shirt midpoint and tuck the tie in there for the time that I'm eating, and then, remove it. I think that works just fine. And I suppose it also determines to some degree what it is you're eating. I think doing something like that is better than ending up, like I say, with spaghetti splash marks on your your tie. You're asking for the waiter for club soda to dab the tie spot and that type of thing.
And what happens if you end up with a big spot on your tie? And that's your favorite tie. That goes
club soda.
Someplace else, though, doesn't it?
Club,
but even if
club soda,
like,
get,
does it get it out?
Well, it helps to lift the stain. And if not, if it's they always say if you get food actually on your tie, let it dry and take like a knife or something and just scrape it off and rub the material. The problem is that silk is really a delicate material. And it's so easy to create a stain or a mark on a silk tie and it also, frankly, speaks to the issue of having a tie dry clean. There's some dry cleaners I wouldn't take a silk tie to. I think they'd end up doing more harm than good to the, it. The answer is don't eat spaghetti sauce and don't eat soup at lunch.
I have a question about.
Okay, hang on, let me go ahead. I want to finish. My point in that was, if you do get a permanent stain on that tie, that tie's toast, right? Don't put that tie on again and wear it. Okay.
You can lift the mark on a tie. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, speaking of ties, I've always wondered this, because this dilemma has happened so many times, because in Maine, it very, very few places expect a tie when you go out to dinner. But some do. And so sometimes we're smart and we call ahead, we ask. But other times we're always faced with, is it better for him to wear it and take it off, or is it better for him to carry it in his pocket and bring it?
I always think that if you're left with a choice of dressing up or dressing down for any occasion, dress up.
Yep.
Okay. I think you never have to apologize to anybody for looking, quote, too good, too nice, too crisp, too clean. And, you know, and I agree, and 25 years ago, you know, for men going to a nice restaurant, it was very common for probably, you know, the majority of the patrons to have a jacket and tie on. And today, you don't see it very much at all, save for, you know, a few restaurants. We have certainly moved to more casual apparel in our lives in more and more occasions. There's just no question about it. I think that's probably a very good example of it. For me, I'd wear the tie. If it wasn't required, I'd probably, frankly,
wear it anyway.
Still wear the tie, and yeah. I'd keep the tie on for dinner as opposed to necessarily taking it off and tucking it in my jacket, but that's just a personal view.
Yeah, that's my that's definitely my dad's rule, that's my husband's rule, and that's our rule with our children. And my husband, for example, if we're going out even probably to Macaroni Grill type a place, he will always go out with a dress shirt and a tie on. You won't ever catch him in a golf shirt in a place like that even. My husband will always, and so will my dad, and we pretty much, anytime we go out for dinner, if it's not fast food, the kids are in generally either like golf shirts or a dress shirt and a tie, mandatory.
Wow.
Yeah, and we have a rule. Yeah, we're very old-fashioned like that, and we also have a rule in our house. Basically, you know, you tuck a shirt in and put a belt on, and that might be old-fashioned too. The kids whine and gripe and carry on about it, but, you know, those shirts in our house, they belong tucked in, and you put your belt on. Do you believe in that, Glenn, or not really?
Well, I think that most
shirts
were, well, yeah, I mean, I think they were, well, the whole idea was to tuck them in. I don't know where I'd go with that, but again, I suspect it's the occasion and where you are and what have you, but neatness and, you know, cleanliness count for something, you know, so.
We always say, we're kind of mean about it in a way, we always say, you see those things? Those are belt loops. And there's a belt that's supposed to kind of go through them. Oh, Mom, it's jeans. And if it's jeans and a T-shirt, we let them get away with it. But if it's like Dockers or khaki pants, dress pants, anything like that, the belt, you know, the belt goes on. So, and it's a challenge, especially with children, because it's very expensive to keep, you know, growing people outfitted like that. You're the dad of four boys. I'm sure you have been through that before with, you know, this isn't even so much about, you know, it sort of starts with youth also. Do you think that kids should be, there's a saying, you know, you dress for success. Do you think the better dressed you are, the more successful you might be?
I don't know if I'd go there with that.
Feel free to challenge it. I'm just asking.
Yeah, I really don't. I think our sons grew up wearing jeans and sweatshirts, and they went from one athletic pursuit to another, and I don't really think it influenced, you know, what they've done later on, frankly.
Okay.
I really don't.
But it definitely influences how they get the jobs they get. And I think it definitely, whenever I've ever interviewed someone, I take notice of how much time they take to get ready for that interview. And it does make a difference. As an employer, sometimes I have literally selected people. Some, not completely, but that does play a part in how you select people. Because I figure if they don't take the time to make themselves look presentable and professional, then they're not going to take the time to do the job well.
Well, I agree. I have a piece in the book about what you should wear to a job interview. And frankly, I'm very hopeful that my book would resonate with college seniors, guys that are you know, about to enter the job market, and saying, what do I need to know about this? I mean, and there's just some simple things. I suspect a college guy has been so used to wearing, you know, Nikes, sandals, and loafers, that the idea of buying a pair of lace shoes to wear with a suit for an interview is somewhat of an anathema, but they need to understand that that's really part of that interview suit that they should be wearing, again, to make a good first impression. And as we all know, how little time you get to make that good first impression. And so, it's not just the suit, therefore. It's, are your fingernails clean? Did you comb your hair? Did you shave? All goes into that, clearly. But, I'm hopeful that some college guys are going to pick up on this. And so.
Yeah.
What else is in your book that you really want people to know that is unique to you?
Probably some things that guys don't think about at all. I think I point some things out that I'm sure somebody's going to read and go, "You got to be kidding!" you want one example of it? I point out in the book that if you look at your belt, hold your belt up. What does it look like? It's bowed in the middle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's because you put your belt on the same way every day. Because you're either left-handed or right-handed, you do things, we're all creatures of habit, we do it. So if you are just conscious of that, and maybe every other week or so put your belt on the other way, your belt will always be virtually perfectly straight. And then it won't, if anybody's looking at the back of your trousers, it just looks better. Some guy's going to read that and go, "All right, is this guy nuts? I mean, I got to worry about, my belt being straight." So I've got a variety of what I'll call, sartorical tips that men might want to think about. And I go into the book about, how do you build a wardrobe? I go into brands that I like a great deal. Everything in menswear, as in ladieswear, goes on sale. So even if it's a brand that's a bit pricey, you can generally buy it on sale nonetheless. And I point out some things about that. Why it's important to own a good raincoat, for God's sakes. I really hope I've covered the waterfront in the book from A to Z. And that somebody ends up reading it and says, "I got something out of this," and they didn't have to plow through 300 pages.
I think it would be, with only, we've got probably 7 minutes left remaining on the call, I think it's really neat to have you on the line and talk and touch on all of these different things. I could see you coming back onto our show, maybe perhaps on a more regular basis, to cover certain topics more in depth. For example, we could have you on and have you cover interviews more carefully, or cover just certain topics a little bit more carefully. But I did want to say this one more time, that for those people just joining us, we are speaking with author Glenn Sondag, who's the author of Anything Other Than Naked. His new book comes out February 1st. And you can go to his website, anythingotherthannaked.com. And we're just really thankful to have you here with us today. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, and we don't have to go just yet, but I wanted to make sure and touch base on that again, and just make sure people have your website and can contact you if they want to. You're also a columnist, a regular columnist on Best Ever You, so you can just click columnist and read the articles that you write that do go into a little bit more depth. I know, Katie, we had joked around a little bit ago about swimwear.
I wanted
to go there for a second, because guys seem to be very, you can go to a pool, a beach, and see just about anything and nothing. I mean, it's wild. What should a guy put on his body as far as swimwear goes?
Not a Speedo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we, broadcast
the Speedo,
that louder?
Speedo,
say
is
that more
fine.
And more, Glenn.
Just say it one more time. Not.
I said not a Speedo, right?
Those are divers, aren't they?
Yes. That is for the guy who is in the pool, making his college swim team and going to those kind of events. That's what that suit was designed for. But a guy that's sitting around a pool at a hotel that's, 5'9" and about 220, and he's got a Speedo on, usually is not a great look. But so anything other than that probably does just fine.
Yeah, that is like, I don't get it. What? Yeah, I don't even know how to go there. There's an entire mindset that just doesn't understand women when they put that on.
Yeah. Well, it's probably also because guys don't put a great value in having a full-length mirror at home. I really do endorse that idea of the book of before you go out the door, just take a look and, you know. For men anyway, for nothing else, and your zipper isn't open when you leave the house, that's probably worth it just then and there. But
Funny. All right, is there, Katie, I know you were I interrupted you, but what were you going to ask? I'm sorry.
Where was I? I was thinking he's got me stuck on the image of the bathing suit now. When I was reading Glenn's most recent column for Best Ever You, and I loved it because one of the things it does is tell me what I can say to my husband about, you know, you don't need 20 jackets. Here's what you need, and here's what fits, and here's what works. And I love your article, Glenn, because you're talking about what coats a man needs and when to wear what. Well, my God, we have a closet full of all these different coats, which I don't think he needs. But you specified several specifics, and I thought that was really helpful.
Thank you. Well, he might say that about your shoe closet, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not so sure too many are. Too many is wrong, but at least having a few of the right ones is probably what's necessary.
Well, at least knowing what they're for, and that helps. Where do you wear a leather jacket, and where do you wear a parka? And around here, like on a day like today, you just wear parkas everywhere, whether you're going to someplace formal or not, because it's just horrendous weather. But I was reading your article with a lot of interest because I would not know what the difference would be to wear a parka and where to wear a leather jacket.
You know, Katie, I wanted to elaborate on that for 1 second. With the weather being so foul with ice and snow on the ground, Glenn, one of the things that I used to see a lot also when I was, more out of the house and in the corporate environment was men slipping in the snow, slipping on the sidewalks in their dress shoes. What is it that men need to put on their shoes that's relatively cooler in style to avoid that in dress shoes so that you don't have the look of boots or sneakers with your suit?
Well, there aren't a lot of choices here. You typically, wear what they call rubbers. There's the type that just kind of cover the sole of the shoe and the toe cap. There's others that go up over the ankle, and if you live in Buffalo, you probably wear the type that go up to your knee. And those are perfectly acceptable to wear. I mean, you don't want to ruin a pair of shoes, and salt is a rough on men's shoes. And so it's not something that you want to go without in those kind of extreme conditions. No, most of us don't live anywhere where the extreme conditions are that perilous for that long a period of time. And so if it means putting on the parka and something like that, so what?
All right. We're completely out of time. And hope that you will come back again join us. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks, ladies.
All right. Thank
you
so much, Glenn.
You're welcome. Thank you. Have a good day.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Isn't he cool? I always say that.
I really encourage people to read his articles on Best Ever You because he does have some very good tips and things that I'm sure I'm not alone in terms of trying to convince my husband to wear something somewhere and not really knowing how to say, this is really the appropriate thing to wear.
Yeah. Well, now you have a resource to say, here, read
now
this
I have
blog.
A resource.
This is where you can go to know that that's what you're supposed to have on or have in your wardrobe. Yeah.
Right.
There's one thing he said that I know Peter is guilty of, and that's wearing really cruddy shoes all the time. And I'm always looking at Peter's shoes going, oh, I wish you'd wear nice shoes again like when we first met. He's let all of his shoes go. So, whatever. mildly.
Well,
important.
I know.
It is
hard when the weather is what it is. And and so you do sacrifice somewhat of the fashion when it's a day like today because, well, frankly, you just got to stay warm and covered up. But but you can always change when you get to someplace. That's my thing. My thing is always, you know.
All right, we
got to
go.
So, we got to go or we're off the air.
10 seconds.
All right, well, anyway.
All right.
Have
a
best
have
ever
a good day.
Yeah,
you
bye.
Too. All right, bye.